Hello and welcome back to Authors Airwaves, where books come alive. I'm your host, Victor Volkman, and this week we'll be listening to author Nancy L. Klaus reading from her book, Journey from Head to Heart, Living and Working Authentically, coming in March 2008 from Loving Healing Press. You can learn more about Nancy at her website, www.headtoheart.info. For AuthorsAirwaves.com, I'm Victor Volkman. Sit back now and listen to the voice of the author.
Grandmother used to give me graham crackers to munch on in church to keep me quiet. In her church, or any other at that time, there wasn't much to interest children. But I was a fairly calm child, so I did a lot of listening, especially to the hymns. I remember one that went, I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world of woe. The idea is that here on earth, we walk dusty roads as wayfarers, lost from our homes. Around us is sin, woe, and all manner of unpleasant experiences. But if we'll just hang in there, eventually we'll get to a different place. Heaven, presumably, although the word is never mentioned, where we'll see our deceased loved ones and then we'll be over Jordan. I'm just going over home. When we find that heaven, we will be dead, according to this hymn. Well, I've done my share of wayfaring. That is, I've learned what is needed for success in this world, as I define success. First, I learned to walk, feed myself, dress myself, talk, and then read and write. Along the way, I learned how to keep myself reasonably safe and get along with other people reasonably well. Also, I made reasonably good grades in school and completed advanced degrees. I've held responsible positions without ever getting fired and have led efforts for change. People might say I reached the level of self-actualization or becoming all that I could be. At one time, not too long ago, I read as many as 5 books a week in a quest to know more. At other times, I became very confused about which road to take. In my darkest time, I woke up living a life I hated, violating even my own principles, values, and standards for living. I'd gotten lost while wayfaring. I had read the signs incorrectly. The idea of having to die before I can reach anything resembling a state of joy and peace isn't very attractive to me. I began to feel very strongly that there must be more I could do right here on earth to improve my state of mind and find a more meaningful purpose for my life. So, I took stock of myself. I wrote this poem. Junctures. That's what they are. The intersections of life with no street names and no road numbers, or different road numbers. Is this A2 or is it N11? Or are they the same? And where the hell am I, anyway? At a juncture. On the roadway of life. Do I go on? Or turn back. I was a performer. If people wanted to get something done, they asked me. Do you know what people do for performers? They applaud them. So I had received much positive reinforcement for doing what other people wanted me to do. So much so that those other people had, in effect, become my gods. My life was out of balance. According to Lehrer and Schwartz, the human system has 4 sources of energy. Physical, which includes health, food, exercise, rest. Mental, where I had overdosed. Emotional and spiritual. I discovered that I had shut down my emotional system many years before in order to avoid pain. I've since learned that the emotional center of the brain doesn't have switches for different emotions. Instead, it has one master switch labeled emotion. So when I unwittingly told my brain to turn off pain, it heard, turn off emotion. I even used to take pride in the fact that people could not hurt my feelings. Some people say we change only out of pain, and this was true for me. As I look back at the poetry that flowed so freely at the time, I remember the pain. Pins can't penetrate my business suit, not even for beauty's sake. Sharp lines, doctor executive, no adornment, everything perfect. Business suit protection from pain. Years after I wrote this poem, when I found myself longing to buy new clothes but unable to find anything in the stores that was different from what I already had, I hired a wardrobe consultant to help me. Her first step was to interview me about what I did in every part of my life, personally as well as professionally. Then we went to my closet to find out what was there to fit my needs. After a morning of sorting, I discovered I had very little in my wardrobe that was suitable for relaxation and recreation. Three large plastic lawn bags of excess business suits went to Goodwill. That afternoon, I returned to my office and began returning telephone calls. In the middle of one call, I was overcome with nausea and felt that I might faint. At that moment, I recognized the symptoms of withdrawal and realized that I had overdosed on my addiction to clothing. Unable to find the sensation or high that I had previously reached from a new outfit, I had, just as alcoholics do, bottomed out. I just no longer got a kick out of going shopping as I had before. This poem says something about where I was at that time. It's called Self-Deluded. How self-deluded can you be? Sister, let me tell. Anesthetize yourself with work and get your kicks from migraines. Insulate yourself from friends, pretending you don't need them. Alienate as many as you can, so they don't get close. OD on food, or clothes, or pills, or sleep, pretending that you need them. How self-deluded can you be? Sister, let me tell. Why don't more people make needed change? Well, throughout history, there have been fewer pioneers than settlers. Shakespeare offers this explanation, transposed from Act 3, Scene 1 of Hamlet. Thus, what we know makes cowards of us all, and makes us rather bear the ills we have than to fly to others that we know not. A scientific term for the phenomenon Shakespeare is describing here is inertia, the tendency of a body to keep on doing what it has been doing. This poem, I bottomed out, I hit the wall, and no one even knew. My face was the same. My hair, my hands. The work went on, and I smiled. Although I was very active in my church, even my spiritual life wasn't spiritual. It was superficially religious, with the same intellectual approach that I had learned so well in school and that served me well in my career. I began to realize I had to make a change. When I drove into a parking space at 7:30 on the first morning of a new project, early morning is my best time of day, and I love new beginnings. Yet on this morning, when I normally would have been full of energy and excitement, I heard an inner voice say, "I am so tired." For the first time, this voice got my attention. The next time I heard my inner voice, I was driving home from work in the late afternoon. This time, its message was more disturbing. "If you don't get out of here, you're going to die." Simply stated, I had been living someone else's life. Whose life? The life of the woman I thought I ought to be based on some notion of what was acceptable to other people. But this woman I had concocted was not in alignment with what was in my soul. And some perceptive people saw the symptoms of my pain: allergies, debilitating migraines, workaholism. Increasingly, something inside told me things had to change. Granddaughter of one of the last pioneers who settled the territory that is now called Oklahoma, I felt the strong pull of my ancestry to leave that which was comfortable, secure, and safe, to venture into the unknown. Here was a kind of prayer that I wrote at the beginning of this transformation. Freight trains are heavy, important, on track. They're noisy and fearless and prompt. They carry the freight that runs the world, and they're indispensable. They're hunched from stuffed cases. Their planners are full, respected, revered, and admired. You can count on them solid to get the job done. Sailboats are open and friendly and free, flowing with current, catching the wind, eyes to horizon and on, gliding toward vast Father Sky. A sailboat is what I aspire to be. But can there be metamorphosis from steel rail to white wind? What cocoon will do? So I struggle on the banks, magnets in my pockets, pulling me toward important tasks, but the sail in my soul wants the wind. Beneath my pain, I was yearning for a better life for myself and those I loved. Love. Love is the most powerful force in the universe. When our yearning grows from love, nothing can stop us. Pain may be an incentive or a byproduct of breaking the barriers, but if we love, we are safe. In a segment of Family Ties, the television show that catapulted Michael J. Fox to stardom during the 1980s, the character of Alex P. Keaton asked on one show, "How do you know if you're good?" The clearest answer he got was, "You know if you're good from what other people tell you." But this answer is incomplete. Which other people? If people are giving you conflicting information, which ones do you listen to? And what about the danger of becoming dependent on other people to the detriment of listening to your own inner voice? On a journey of self-discovery, how do you know if you're on the right track? Out of all the self-help books, spiritual teachings, and conflicting religious beliefs. How do you know which ones are right for you? Well, not through wayfaring, but through wayfinding. I drove out of the car lot onto rain-slick pavement, gently gliding that gray Lincoln toward almost exhausted gray clouds. It was our last dance. And the skies threw silver streamers at forked angles in celebration. This was the car I drove to freedom, and I grasped hard the padded, elegant wheel, wanting not to turn loose, knowing it was time for us to part. I needed you then, and you were there. To make the transition from wayfaring to wayfinding, I stopped looking to other people for affirmation. I stopped following prescribed courses of study or career paths. I started paying more attention to the voice within and sought the solace of nature, the soft end of daylight beyond the hills, beckoned my soul fully to sense, feel, and know. With the guidance of kind Mother Nature, I began to feel safe enough to release all the pent-up emotion that I had blocked for decades. It came out of me in cascades of grief and anger. Here's one expression. Please don't adore me. Not even admire. Ordain to call me bright. Now, I don't want scorned or rejected or dumb, but adore is so distant. Admire lacks warmth. And bright? Well, I'd rather be close, accepted, and loved. Can I be bright and be loved? After I stopped being a wayfarer, looking to people, work, places, and things for meaning, after I accepted the humanity of my own deep feelings, after I started observing nature and listening to her voice, I became calm enough to become a wayfinder. The Hawaiian Islands rose from the ocean floor through volcanic activity over a period of hundreds of thousands of years. When they appeared in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, of course they were uninhabited. They were lava. They were more remote and isolated than any other islands on Earth. Yet, by the time Captain James Cook arrived in 1731, people had been living on the islands for generations. Where did they come from? Their ancestors arrived in these islands long before they had the compasses or sextants that had aided Captain Cook and his crew. What tools then did they use besides sheer courage? The people who first found the Hawaiian Islands most likely came from Asia, Indonesia, and Africa, navigating unknown waters with paddles and canoes, using the ancient art of wayfinding that had been passed down through the generations. Simply stated, the wayfinder knew how to read the stars, the winds, the waves, and the behavior of such animals as dolphins and seabirds to determine where land was. They knew the time of year and the time of day when the winds would be most favorable for sea travel and the direction in which they were blowing, memorizing the star pattern in the sky at the time of their departure. They kept that pattern in mind to know how far and in what direction they had traveled. Uncertain of exactly what they would find, they envisioned an area where they most likely would find land. In much the same way that a golfer tries only to get onto the green before aiming directly at the flag. Similarly, once they got close to land, From the behavior of birds and the nature of the water, wayfinders could find the land. Similarly, the wayfinder on a journey of self-discovery also learns to receive feedback that lets her know whether or not she's staying on course to reach her goal. Following are the feedback sources I learned to trust. One is insight from contemplation and journaling, a practice I still follow every morning and describe like this. I extinguish all the voices. I turn out all the lights. I lie down and listen to the silent silence. I hear the silent drip of raindrops, the silent call of wind, the silent course of teardrops, the silence of the void. Then, from the silent silence, I hear a silent voice. A second source for finding my way is readings. In earlier times, I read as many as 5 books a week in an effort to stay current. I no longer do that. Instead, I read when directed by my inner voice. I consider carefully what other people, even people I admire, tell me I must read. Instead, I'm more likely to pick up a book after contemplation and open it randomly. Or after seeing a book often referred to, I consider it might be something I want to learn about. After I've seen the reference 3 times, I buy it. Now I'm reading books about people I would like to become more like. When certain passages resonate within me or stir my heart, I know they are teaching me what I need to learn at that moment. The same voice informs me concerning other media, movies, television shows, plays, musical performances. But I'm also free to turn off the voice and simply enjoy anything I choose. A third source is people I trust. Fortunately, there are a few people who want the best for me, who understand my life's path and goals, and who act as a mirror for me when I need a reality check. Often I simply tell them what has happened and ask them to tell me what they heard. If I'm acting out of anger, they tell me. If they hear sadness or despair, they tell me. If I'm violating my own principles, they tell me so. I heed what they say. As I learn and change, I accept new advisors who've experienced what I want or something close to it. If you choose to become a wayfinder, find others to go on the journey with you. Become each other's trusted advisors. Genuine success is creating and living a life that aligns with who you truly are. The purpose of this book is to provide a little information, awareness, and many tools that make success possible. People who choose to live the life that is truly theirs make a commitment to speak from their hearts, work the process with rigorous honesty and purity of intent, and be authentic. Make the journey from head to heart. Live and work authentically.
You can learn more about Nancy at her website, www.headtoheart.info. For AuthorsAirwaves.com, this is Victor Volkman. See you next time, and thanks for listening.